Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks so much. We appreciate your support. You can contact me directly through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at Macroaggressions. You can follow us on Instagram, at Macroaggressions Podcast. Thanks to our sponsors who make this show possible. Legal Shield has been in business for half a century with an A-plus rating in the Better Business Bureau's website for doing business both in Canada and the United States. They offer a fantastic service. It's like a dollar a day. You're going to have access to a collective group of high-powered attorneys in your area to get you access to just about everything you need. If you have contracts that need to be reviewed, if you want to have them get involved in creating contracts for you, last will and testament is a good place to start. You got to have that. Medical power of attorney, financial power of attorney, these annoying documents that you need to have if you're going to be, if you're just going to be an adult and dealing in this Western world that we live in. If you die without a will, the state gets involved. You can't have that. You just can't. This is a way to knock these things out at a very, very affordable price. I mean, $30 a month is what will get you in the door. If you want to add in like a la carte items such as Identity Shield, go for it. There's a component in there. If you carry a gun, you can do that. If you run a small business, there's a small business component to this. There's a lot of options out there. I think that the best thing you could do, if this sounds like something that maybe you're interested in, or you know somebody in your life that might have a need for this service, go to the website. That's it. www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. It's all there. It's all laid out. There's a variety of different, let's just call them a la carte items that you can add into this. I think it's it gets you in at a price that's it's so affordable that it's almost a no-brainer, especially when you consider the fact that to try and get these documents done individually, if you just reached out to an attorney in your area, it's going to cost you several thousand bucks. It just is. That's just the reality of the situation. But thanks to Legal Shield, they allow us to sort of level the playing field, get us the little guy's access to attorneys that we rightly probably couldn't afford otherwise. So take a look at Legal Shield, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. Also, thanks to EMP Shield, since we're sticking with the theme of shields, EMP Shield is building a device that is so effective that the government itself, the military, sort of asked questions about wanting to see it. They liked the design that the EMP Shield guys had built a little bit better than theirs. The device will protect you against EMPs. against solar flares, against lightning strikes. You can install it on your home. You can install it in your car. If you have a motorhome or a boat, you can put it there. If you have a generator, you can install it there. They have bundle packages. If you've got multiple things that you want to, just take a look. Go to EMPShield.com and read up about it. If you want, you can find the installation videos on their website or over on YouTube. It's fitted to household circuit breakers with just four wires. It installs like a type 2 surge protector. Or you can have an electrician swing by and put it on your house. But I'll tell you, it fits with the theme of the show, which is being proactive, which is being a couple months early as opposed to a day or two late. You don't want to, you're not going to be buying EMP Shield the day after the EMP strikes. Okay. You may wish you had, you may want it, but I think it's just something for people to check out. So go to the website. You tell me if you find something you like. The promo code is Macro. It will definitely save you a bunch of money, but I hope we don't need it. I hope we don't need it for the EMP stuff. You might need it for the lightning, depending on where you live. It's a reasonable thing. EMPShield.com, promo code Macro. Well, I read a lot for this job, and I read all kinds of things. Books, websites, articles, little magazine reports. I listen to podcasts. I do as much work as I can. It doesn't really feel like work. I'm interested in this stuff, but I do read a ton. And listen to videos of people that are writers that do interviews. And many years ago, I came across Charles Hugh Smith, who's fantastic. He runs a website called Of Two Minds, and he's a writer. He's written books, and I read this article that he had written for Of Two Minds that wound up getting picked up by Zero Hedge and sort of put out everywhere. And it was talking about a concept I'd never heard of before. I just didn't know the name of it. I know the inner workings of it. I understand how it works and what it is. I just didn't know that somebody had got smart and gave it a name. The name for what they're talking about is called a doom loop. Okay. It's like a feedback loop of misery. And it's used in regards to talking about the mechanics of a city, usually a big city, but not always. But it talks about the life cycle of a city, not necessarily a natural life cycle of a city, but what can happen if you start to add inputs into the city that, that throw it off balance a little bit. It creates issues, and they define it as a decline in work in the center business district results in less foot traffic and consumption. This leads to certain things, the wheels falling off, right? So what they're saying is you've got a big city and we change one thing about it. There's, for whatever reason, there's a decline in the number of people that are going into work every day in that city. Whatever reason. Let's do traffic, close down a bridge, COVID, whatever. So, something happens and there's a disruption to the downtown network of people that usually Monday through Friday, sometimes Saturday and Sunday, but usually during weekdays, come into the city either as commuters or people that maybe live in the city but have to, and also work down there. And what this is talking about, what happens when you remove a sizable segment of the population from downtown, what does that do? And the impact is that it's a cascading effect, right? It one thing impacts another, and then that winds up impacting something else, and then it's a domino, right? So we're talking about this in terms of, what happens? It can lead to economic freefall. It can lead to major budget shortfalls from declining tax revenues. It can lead to mass layoffs of city workers. It can cause people to leave the city center permanently. So what Charles Hugh Smith was talking about, he puts it this way. He says, the decline of one of the inputs holding up the status quo weakens the other inputs. This weakness feeds back on itself, accelerating the decline until a critical support level breaks and the system collapses. Now, this is what we're seeing in some big cities. They all have a couple things in common. The cities are run by Democrats, okay? And again, I'm not on that red team over there. I'm not on the blue team. We're just being objective. We're just being agnostic about this. The reality is that this happens in Democrat cities. It doesn't happen in big Republican cities. It doesn't happen unless there is an input that is changed on a governmental level. Then it starts, you know. But with regard to how a city, a major city in the United States that's run by a Democratic governor, or maybe the state is run by a Democratic governor, and then the city is run by a Democratic governor. When you get those two combinations, then you start to find insanity becoming normalized, really dumb ideas being thrown around like they're good ideas, like reparations and shit like that. And you start to find that there's no checks and balances, because the mentally ill Democrats, you know, Democrat that's running the city, the mayor, is normally, you know, normally their ideas, if they went up the chain to the governor, if it was a sane, rational governor that wasn't maybe a Democrat, then they would say, oh, but this is insanity. I'm not getting on board with any of these things. And so there'd be a pushback there, but there's not. When you've got both of them in the same mental headspace, which is, we have the dumbest ideas you've ever heard of, we're going to implement them immediately. And then the governor of the state says, that sounds like a good idea. How much money do you need? That's when you start to see things break down. So let's use this as let's make this up. Let's say big city USA, right? Downtown of big city USA. Let's use COVID years. Okay. And we could sort of lay out how this process could work. Remote work kicks in during COVID, guts downtown foot traffic to offices. Okay. This is easy to imagine because this happened. Right. So during lockdowns, post lockdowns, where people were sort of out, but they were bulldozing sand into skate parks and arresting surfers for surfing, you're still in this area where it wasn't 2 weeks to flatten the curve any longer. People were out of their houses, but there was still a lack of sanity. And so there were still incredibly dumb ideas being proposed, and people were still very scared. So even if they were given the all clear to go back to work, a lot of them didn't go back to work. There was a segment of time where it was like everybody's on Zoom to the extent that they can be. And if you don't need to come into the office, then please do not, because we're trying to, you know, flatten the curve and limit the number of interactions we have, and you got to stand on the dot and all that bullshit. So there was a time in which they didn't want you to come into the office. Now, if we're using Everytown USA downtown as an example of this, then it was a government mandated force that told you to not go to work. Okay. Then it became a sort of media reinforced idea to not go in. Then it became your friends and family were telling you it's not safe to go, whatever the reason was. Eventually the reason became nobody's going into downtown. It's like post-apocalyptic downtown, right? Where it just the trash guys weren't picking up trash. There weren't any people that were really going out. It was like a weird science fiction novel. So you get that. Then as a result of that, this is where the looping part starts. You get public transit revenue falls due to a lack of riders. Of course, there's a lack of riders. There's nobody going to downtown. So all the subway systems and the buses that people use, or the taxis or rideshare or whatever, all that revenue disappeared, just wasn't there anymore. And they count on that. They count on revenue being there every day. The subway runs every day. The toll bridges are open every day. All those revenue collecting streams out there theoretically are operational 24/7, but then they weren't. So they stopped for a large period of time. You had small businesses close due to poor sales, small businesses in the downtown, in this downtown we're talking about. You had large corporations downsize office space. You had commercial real estate owners starting to default because they're not getting, because people aren't, companies are going out of business and they're like, well, I can't pay you rent if my company's, my donut shop isn't in existence anymore. I can't go to work to open my donut shop or my small hardware store. Of course, Home Depot's open. Don't get me wrong. Let's not be crazy. They've got to keep that open because they're trying to destroy small and medium-sized businesses. But if you run a small and medium-sized business in this downtown scenario and you're forced to close, you can't pay your rent, right? So then there was like government subsidies for this sort of stuff, and there was PPP loans and whatever. You know, there was all this stuff. But you had defaults due to businesses just no longer paying their rent anymore. So what does that do? The owners of the commercial real estate, what, do they just magically wave a wand and that's fine? No, they don't receive the revenue that they need to service the debt on the buildings that they own. And so they start to have problems and they start to lose their, they start to default on their office buildings, and then the banks start to take that, and it's contagion, right? So business tax base shrinks. There's no business going on. A lot of, and also as a sort of a subset of this, commercial real estate slash business tax base shrinks, especially if you're on a if you're on a sort of lease deal where you're paying it's a percentage lease. There's different types of leases. There's some where you pay like a fixed amount every month. There's some that are called like full service gross. There's some that are triple net, and there's some that are percentage leases. And if you're a percentage lease business, you may have it so that you're paying $5,000 a month rent plus 10% of revenue or whatever. And if you're closed, there's no money coming in in either way. So again, these commercial real estate firms or owners were taking a beating in this fictional scenario, right? So, but business tax base shrinks. So you're not open, you're not creating sales tax. So that money's not going back to the city or the state. And so they have less revenue. So everything is affected. A rise in property crime due to empty stores and lack of a budget for more police. Or BLM protesters, just name your boogeyman there. Increase in homeless population and drug use as these stores go away, they're not reopening. Then it's hard times for everybody. So what do you do when the wheels are falling off? A lot of people drink, a lot of people do drugs, you know. So you start to, this is part of what they call the doom loop, right? City becomes too dangerous. Public health becomes an issue as homeless take over public areas and parks. Now you're worried. Now you're not just worried about your business or getting to work or whatever. Now you're worried about being at work because now you come out of your office, which used to be fine. And now you come out and it's a homeless encampment everywhere because nobody has any jobs and everybody's now strung out on fentanyl and things are happening, right? So it doesn't take long for this to run itself through this cycle. And then what's the final outcome? The city dies. It just dies. You go through the cycle of life and you come out at the death of the city. Now, when you look back on it, you go, shit, man, did this city get hit by a asteroid? No, it got hit by government. It got hit by dumb government decisions, which mandated people to change their behavior in a way that threw the balance of the downtown nature out of whack. And in order to reset itself, it had to go through this doom loop. And what it did is it killed the city. So this is, and look, I think here are some words to live by. Government always makes things worse. It just always does. It just always makes it worse. So when the government is mandating that you shut your business because of a virus with a 99.98% survivability rate, you understand that you're being run by morons and they're affecting your livelihood. It's very tough. I have a lot of respect for those gym owners in New Jersey that kept their gym open. And they said, you can put me in, you take me down to headquarters in handcuffs if you want, but I'm keeping my gym open. This is my livelihood. This is my life. I'm getting people healthy so that they have a better chance of fighting this virus that's going to kill everybody, right? So, and what do? They shut the guy, try to shut the guy's business down. Because again, everything the government gets involved with turns to shit because it's the worst sort of people running it with the dumbest ideas and there's no check on their power, especially in a situation like when we went through COVID, where you had emergency powers. I mean, emergency powers allowed these incompetent governors and mayors to it showed them that's the only way they know how to govern. They certainly can't come up with better ideas or build a better mousetrap. If they could do that, they wouldn't be in government. You know, so those who can do, those who can't teach, those who can do in the real world, those who can't go into government to tell everybody else what to do. Meanwhile, they typically have no experience leading people or showing any form of success, because if they did, they'd be in the private sector, not the public sector. So political decisions lead to destruction because they deny reality. They're not politicians, not very smart. They just aren't. Just smart enough to know what to tell people and but just dumb enough to never get anything right. And they're only really concerned with the optics. They're not concerned with results. That's why they don't come into office and start solving problems. They push them off. They kick the can down the road. Oh, well, we've got to deal with this debt. We're just going to increase the debt ceiling. Really? Well, I thought the debt ceiling was there to make sure that you didn't accrue any more debt, you know, being that it's a ceiling and all, like you can't go past it. Oh, well, we've got a solution to this. Oh, awesome. Tell me what it is. You're going to reduce the amount of debt? No, we're just going to raise the ceiling. Okay. I mean, typical government response to a problem. So again, when you look at these doom loops, this scenario, this fictional scenario that I just laid out here, what you understand is that this isn't theoretical. In fact, there's no better example of political destruction kickstarting a doom loop than what's happening in our favorite city to talk about, San Francisco. So let's talk about this. I don't have to make up a fake scenario for this one. I don't have to say, oh, well, what? Just imagine, if you will, a city that's run so poorly that everything falls apart. This is a documentary, not a science fiction episode. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about watching a doom loop in real time with San Francisco. And I know I've picked on them a bunch, but it's like watching a live experiment. I mean, I'm going to keep talking about them too. They're fascinating. The people that run San Francisco is fascinating. And let me just get this out of right at the beginning. Those of you that are rational, reasonable human beings in San Francisco listening to this, that feel trapped by all of this insanity, this woke retardation, I have a ton of sympathy for you. I wish you guys weren't behind enemy lines, so to speak. I'm sorry that you are. The rest of your brothers and sisters in San Francisco, you guys, I have no sympathy for, because you keep voting for this and this is what you get. Well, I can't believe the wheels fell off of San Francisco. I can't believe it. I mean, I voted for no law enforcement. I voted for open air drug use. I voted for them to reduce the age of consent between adults and minors. I voted for people to shit in the streets. That's fine. I voted for homeless encampments to grow unchecked. I voted for all this stuff, and then I got it. Now I'm scared. I can't leave my house because there's 18 guys shooting up right out in front of my front door. And then when I get to my car, all the windows are broken because people have been rummaging through there. You know what? Too bad. You have no place to complain about this. You voted for it. You wanted it. You got it. What did you think was going to happen? Well, let's talk about this. Remote work gutted major cities, to be fair, but no place was hit harder than San Francisco. In fact, it was, statistically speaking, the most hardest hit from the remote work phenomenon, in part because you've got a lot of tech companies there, and theoretically you could do a lot of this stuff from home. If you were able to work from home in the tech field, then you were working from home during COVID and to an extent still. So San Francisco, being this tech hub, was able to send a lot of people home, and they didn't have to really get out and come into downtown as much as they had before. They also suffered from magical thinking of local governments by dipshit Mayor London Breed, Soros District Attorney Chesa Bowden, all the retards running the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, the Scott Wiener guy who's trying to push, when he's not in a leather bondage outfit marching during Pride Month, he's trying to lower the age of consent with children to below 10 years age difference between anything below 10 years age difference. He wants to make that not illegal. I mean, these are the things that pedophiles do, of course. I mean, everybody is aware of this. And so instead of focusing on the real problems, we're instead the Scott Wieners of the world and the boards of supervisors is focusing on reparations and lowering the age of consent. Not the fact that junkies have lit another car on fire right out in front of the mayor's office, or that the fucking board of supervisors for San Francisco had to postpone their meeting because a bunch of junkies blew out the internet feed that was coming into the building by lighting it on fire. So, like, even these Wokeians at the Board of Supervisors had their lives disrupted by, here come the consequences of my actions coming back to bite me in the ass. Well, yeah. Again, what did you think was going to happen? Office occupancy in downtown San Francisco is down 43%. Okay. This should never happen. I mean, this reminds me of like Detroit when it went through the automobile crisis, the fact everything got exported from NAFTA and whatnot. And then you started to see things shrink, and then there was no reason to go to work in the city in Detroit anymore. And then you had office vacancies, then you had industrial vacancies, then you had retail vacancies, then there's no people there. And then the storefronts get boarded up, and then the homeless people move in, and all of this stuff happened in Detroit, but it would never happen in San Francisco again. Right? Wink, wink. Currently San Francisco has 29.4% vacancy rate. That should never happen. As somebody that worked in real estate, commercial real estate as well, if you've got 30% of your buildings unfilled, you're in trouble. You're right on the edge. But let me go into a little bit more detail as to exactly what this looks like. Just the San Francisco commercial office marketplace. There is currently, if you need an office space and you don't mind people shooting up fentanyl in your elevator, there is 18.4 million square feet of available office space in San Francisco right now. 18 million square feet. To put this in perspective, this is the equivalent. Have you seen the Salesforce Tower in San Francisco? It's the tower that was built on a faulty foundation that's sinking. And in for a corporation, Salesforce, that's run by Mark Benioff, who is one of the grand poobahs of the World Economic Forum. So I have zero sympathy for this, but their building is tilting now. It is sinking, but who cares? But just look up an image of what Salesforce Tower looks like. It's a huge skyscraper. I mean, I don't know the exact height of it, but think of it's every bit as much of a gigantic skyscraper as you can picture in your mind. In San Francisco, there's the equivalent of 13 of those buildings that are just completely empty. You've got 50 Fremont Street, that building, that's the Salesforce building. There's a Salesforce building, 90% vacant. 500 Howard Street, This is where Slack is located, the company Slack, which is now owned by Salesforce. 95.4% vacant. You've got another Slack office at 45 Fremont Street, 60% vacant. You've got 181 Fremont Street, which is Meta, not the main campus in Menlo Park, but this is the one in downtown San Francisco. 435,000 square feet of office space in 181 Fremont. That's what Meta is renting. 100% vacant. Gone. They've left. Facebook, Meta, their San Francisco building, there's nobody there. They're all in Menlo Park at One Hacker Way. They've left. That's not a good thing. From a business standpoint, if you're Facebook, I understand why you do it. You don't need it. You don't need this space. You know, you make that decision as a corporation. But if you're the group that owns the building, you're now 100% vacant, you're in trouble. You're going into bankruptcy. You just haven't yet. So they're talking about housing conversions. They're talking about from office to condo. They're saying, well, we're going to solve the problem. All this office space, we're just going to convert it into condos. Okay, yeah, again, and sell them to whom? Everybody's leaving San Francisco. They're not staying. The people that are staying there are people that can't leave, because I'm going to get to it in a little bit about who. Well, you know what? Let's do it now. People leaving San Francisco. This is from 2019. Since 2019, which is, okay, let's just call it like, let's just say 4 years. 4 years. The amount of time it takes you to start and finish high school. 4 years. In those 4 years in San Francisco, 55% of food service workers have left. They've just left the city. They can't afford to be there. They don't feel safe being there. They don't want to be there. Or the jobs are gone and they're not there. More than half of the people that work in the food service industry aren't in San Francisco anymore. They're gone. 34% of just general service workers are gone. They've left. A third of the service workers aren't there anymore. 26% of office administrators. So all the people that sort of work in the backbone of offices all around San Francisco, one out of every four of them is left. They're gone. And this is an interesting number. It's a smaller number, but it's a little bit more. It probably tells you more that about this problem than either of any of the three statistics before it. But 7% of computer engineers and scientists have left San Francisco. So yes, it's a smaller number, 7%, much smaller than 55%, 34%, or 26%. But what this means, I get it. When people that are making minimum wage have to leave San Francisco because they can't afford to live and work there anymore, that's understandable to everybody. But here's the problem. When you've got 7% of your smart, rich engineer people leaving, and your entire city is sort of based around tech, I think that says more than anything. The rich people are leaving. It's time, you know what I mean? They've had it. If you can work somewhere else, you're working somewhere else. If you can live somewhere else, you're living and working somewhere else. Why stay in San Francisco? It used to be the city by the bay, right? Journey wrote a song about it. So fantastic. And now what is it? Well, you know what it is. We've done a lot on this. So city of San Francisco is forecasting a $728 million deficit over just the next 2 years. They expect that amount to rise to $1.2 billion deficit by 2028. That's 5 years from now. This is a company that the city of San Francisco, so to speak, is a company that needs to be put into bankruptcy to reorganize their affairs. They're falling apart. Property tax appeals. Do you know what? So when you own a home or a condo, you get a property tax bill every year, at least in America. Here's how it works. They calculate, it's a really obscure formula that they use that's not necessarily anchored in a ton of logic. It's sort of fuzzy math, but they basically make a determination on what your property taxes are based on how they value your property. values go up each year, theoretical, your property tax will probably go up each year, almost matched with that. Since you're not selling your house, you don't really have a sold price for your house. So they can't tell you exactly what it is, but so they make a rough estimate. Now, if you go through a cratering of prices, 2008 through 2011, something like that, where the values take a huge hit, then the city is usually not in a huge hurry to make that reflection in your property taxes. You have to petition them. You have to do what is called a property tax appeal. You say, well, listen, you were sending me a property tax based on $1 million, this condo that I own in downtown San Francisco valued at $1 million. It's not valued at $1 million anymore. It's valued at $700,000. So I want you to, I'm appealing my property tax, and I want you to revalue it at the new, more correct number of $700,000 and make the percentage calculation based off of that number instead of $1 million. That's what they're talking about. So in San Francisco, they say that property tax appeals could cost the city $200 million a year. So again, this is that feedback loop that they're talking about. People start to leave. It creates problems in the office markets. People aren't going in the office anymore. Office buildings start going out of business. The retail components on the ground floor that are selling the coffee shop, the dry cleaners, the grocery store, the little mini mart, whatever, those, they start to feel the pain because 43% of people aren't coming into San Francisco anymore. Their office occupancy downtown is down 43%. So now 4 out of every 10 people that normally would be coming in your store, they're not even in the area anymore. They're home. They're somewhere else. They're elsewhere. So they're not even in your, they're not even potential customers. So now the retails start to feel the pain and they close up. That is, if they could even stay in building as the parent company that owns the master building that they're in. You know, usually it's office building, 50-story office building. You've got the bottom floor is retail. Well, listen, if that whole office building goes into foreclosure, you're going to have problems with your retail. It could affect you. I mean, they have to honor your lease, of course, but you're going to start to feel the pain too as the owner of this building starts to say, I can't make any money. I got to raise my rent on you guys, you know, the mom and pop dry clean store. And the dry cleaner goes, we can't pay anymore. We're not paying anymore. And so it becomes a huge problem. So you've got forecasting, you know, basically $750 million deficit just in the next 2 years. And they expect that number to hit $1.2 billion in 5 years. That's a catastrophe for San Francisco. You've got the BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit. That's the subway system for San Francisco. The BART is in serious trouble. Down 72% for downtown, just downtown riders. 3 out of every 4 people that would have gotten on the BART to come in from over, you know, Oakland or wherever, they're not coming in anymore. 3 out of 4 of them, they're not riding the train anymore. So what does that do? Well, a $300 million deficit is expected for the BART by 2026. That's not good. But of course, the politicians in San Francisco have come up with a plan on how to fix that. You're going to love it. You know what their plan is? They're going to raise taxes to fill in the gap. In California, a state with the highest state tax in the nation, 13.3%. So you're going to take a state that already has the highest taxes in the nation. You're going to increase the taxes on people that aren't there anymore. And you think that's going to help make things better. It's government logic. Chinatown businesses closing, 15% of them are gone. You've got commercial real estate collapse in downtown. Obviously, it's not just, it's office and retail. When I say commercial, meaning both of those, as opposed to residential, you've got overpriced residential that has to collapse. If we're just using mathematics and economics, which apparently are racist these days, you would look at this and you'd go, I'm expecting a catastrophe in residential San Francisco condo values, right? Home prices and condo values, you would think. you may get, you should theoretically get it. But yeah, I'll tell you what, if you're looking to short a property market, I would short the San Francisco property, the housing market. Why would anyone want to live there? Why? There's no reason anymore. All of the things that made it worthwhile, they're gone. So you are just living in an open air ghetto with high rise buildings that are half filled and retail stores that are going out of business and shutting down their stores. Well, speaking of that, let's talk about the San Francisco store closures. God knows I've talked about them quite a bit, but I think that you need to hear this just in the way of a long list, because this isn't getting better. In fact, it's accelerating in the wrong direction. We have Walgreens. We've mentioned this before. Walgreens has left San Francisco. For those of you that aren't familiar with Walgreens, it's a little a drugstore. They sell over-the-counter drugs. You can get prescriptions filled there. They sell makeup. They sell beach chairs and suntan lotion. You can get Cokes and drinks and chips and, you know, some easy to go food stuff. You can buy headphones for your whatever your device is, little candy bars, whatnot. Walgreens just said, we're done. And they closed 22 stores. They closed all their stores in San Francisco. They just said, this is pointless. There's no reason we're going to stay in business. CVS, same thing. It's a drugstore just like Walgreens. In fact, sometimes you walk in one, you can't even tell if you're in one or the other, but they've closed their stores as well. We've mentioned Target. Target is still staying in business in San Francisco, but they closed their stores at 6 o'clock at night. Maybe you've seen online the videos of people walking through Targets in San Francisco where everything is behind plexiglass. They turned Target San Francisco into a Japanese vending machine without the used women's underwear in it, I might add. For now, you can find the used underwear in the aisle 4 on the floor there. They closed Gap. They closed the T-Mobile flagship store. They closed H&M, which is a clothing store. Abercrombie & Fitch, they closed that. Crate & Barrel is done. They closed Uniqlo. They closed Marshalls, Athletica, Arctecary. I don't even know what the fuck that store is. I don't know. It's probably some women's clothing store. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's gone. Naga, not going to work here anymore. So, Saks Fifth Avenue is gone. Nordstrom's left. Nordstrom's Rack left. Amazon Go, you know, Amazon Go, where you can just walk in. There's no people working there. You just scan your credit card before you go in, and then you walk in and grab everything. And on your way out, it sort of does like you walk through a sensor and it senses what you've got and it charges your card. Amazon Go left. That's funny. That's weird that they just left everybody on the honor system there at Amazon Go and they got totally robbed and now they have to shut that place. It seems like maybe that wasn't a good place to test it out. Was Seattle unavailable? I'm sure they did it there too. Whole Foods is gone. The flagship store. We mentioned that. In fact, speaking of Whole Foods, now owned by Amazon, it overpriced or semi-organic food. Organic doesn't mean what it used to mean, but Whole Foods also doesn't mean what it used to mean either. So Whole Foods, they just made the decision last month to close up their shop and just leave because they can't keep it open. But that's weird. I thought all this woke ideology was stunning and brave. What was the problem there, Whole Foods? I mean, please enlighten us. Why did you decide to leave after being there and investing all the money into the store? Well, over the last 13 months, the Whole Foods in San Francisco called the emergency calls to the police. In 13 months, they called 568 times. 568 times in 13 months. Workers were threatened with weapons. They had people overdosing in the bathrooms. I mean, it's a mess. Okay. So Whole Foods had to go. Anthropology left. Office Depot left. Coco Republic, which is an Australian furniture store. Coco Republic decides we're going to move. We're going to start selling furniture in America. It's going to be great. We're going to build our flagship store in San Francisco. They opened it 7 months ago. A grand opening, grand closing, as Chris Rock said. They're done. They left. And you know what they cited? They said, there's no foot traffic. There's no people here. There's no people here. Yeah. Dude, I could have saved you a ton of money. Look, these companies that are leaving, they can't afford the insurance. They can't call the police. Chesa Bowden put that law, that changed the laws. Anything under $950 that's being stolen in San Francisco is not a crime. So the police, even if you call them, they're not coming out. So everything that's under $950 is fair game to be stolen. And when you know the police aren't going to come and you're a burglar or a criminal or whatever, or you're, listen, you're just some fucked up kid who's strung out on heroin and you made a huge mistake with your life and you wish you'd never done this. And you're sort of trapped in your own version of a feedback loop and you're just trying to, you know, make it another day and you need to steal to get high. Like I get that. I'm not even mad at that necessarily. It's, you got to make some life changes, of course, but I understand the logic behind it. I don't think it's a great way to live, but I do understand that you can fall into these traps. You can also get yourself out of them. But as a store who's presumably trying to make a profit, you can't do that in these sorts of environments. So you've got 95% of San Francisco's business tax revenue comes from downtown, and yet I just listed off a long list of all the stores that are leaving downtown. So again, this feeds into it. So you can't come into sit into the city because whatever, COVID, right? Then that impacts office space, and then that impacts retail space, and then that impacts property taxes. Then the property taxes impacts the ability to pay for police to come in. Not that they would even do anything if they got there, but theoretically you would have revenue, you know, the money needed to run your city properly. You wouldn't have to be cutting back everything. Then you have nobody coming in, so your public transit takes in no revenue there. They need a bailout. The only way that these politicians can think to bail out anybody is to just shake, hold you upside down and shake you until money falls out of your pocket through taxation. So like everything, then there's no foot traffic because there's no office workers coming in anymore. So all these retail stores go out of business. And then that causes, when San Francisco gets 95% of its tax revenue from downtown, but all the base of your tax revenue of all these stores is they're walking out the door and leaving the city. Now, what do you do? You have drug deaths in San Francisco up 41% in the first quarter, but let's focus on reparations because that's the priority. Reparations for a state, California, that didn't have slavery, paying reparations to people that weren't slaves. Just, I mean, only somebody as completely deranged as Gavin Newsom could come up with an idea that idiotic. But speaking of Gavin Newsom, he's called in the National Guard to help with the drugs and homelessness problem. Oh, you mean the problem that you created? Now you want the National Guard to come in and bail you out of the problem that you created from your own woke ideology. Oh my God. He won't prosecute murderers, but he's figuring out ways to spend $880 billion that California doesn't have to pay reparations to people that weren't slaves in a state that didn't have slavery. Great job. Didn't I just mention that BART is expecting $300 million deficit and that there's going to be a $1.2 billion deficit in the city of San Francisco by 2028, but you're worried, but you're focusing on $880,000 million to pay people reparations? Stop. I mean, this is so okay. Let's move on past San Francisco. Let's talk about the doom loop for the nation itself. Okay. How would we go about starting a doom loop for the United States of America? Any ideas? How about this? What if, and this is just an idea here. But what if we printed $8 trillion out of thin air during COVID? Just out of the blue. Just turned on the money printer goes burr, right? We just start printing money like crazy. And kickstarting inflation / hyperinflation. Well, I wonder if that would be any good. Then what we could do, if we really wanted to get this doom loop going for the country, we would suppress the oil and gas industry by restricting drilling and permits. Because if there's one thing I know that makes every country work really well, it's when you don't have any energy. Yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe we could also force the entire country into a renewable energy future when the infrastructure is two full decades behind being able to even take care of it. Prime example, since I said we were going to get off San Francisco, but I still got one more stroke left for them. Look, you guys are pushing this electric vehicle concept, this green transition, this green communism for California, and saying that everybody's got to be on electric by a certain year in 2035, and we're not building any more trucks that are, you know, combustion engine. It's all going to be electric. And California can't handle in August when it gets above 102 degrees. All the power is running on backup generators, and they're talking about rationing power and brownouts throughout the state. But you want to put all the cars on that infrastructure too? I mean, again, $880 billion for reparations, maybe invest some of that in your electric grid as an idea. I mean, I know I'm no politician here, but I play one on the podcast, and I just don't understand how any of this money is being spent. I don't understand how these ideas, these green ideas that require a massive infrastructure overhaul, are going to ever take shape when you can't plug your car in even at night because they tell you it'll zap the electric grid. But again, maybe I'm looking at it from the wrong perspective. Maybe I'm looking at it from a place of wanting everything to actually work correctly, and they're looking at it from a Clower and Piven strategy of how can we break this entire system so that we can rebuild it. Well, I mean, the electric vehicle idea for a nation is certainly one way to do it. Another way we could, for, you know, kickstart a doom loop for the nation would be, I don't know, if we opened up the southern border and just allowed 6 million people to come in the last 2 years. That seems like a really bad idea. That seems like an idea that would fail in every way that it can fail. So again, are we looking at this? Are we in the early stages of what we're going to get in a couple of years, where we're going to be suffering the consequences of our own insane ideas for this sort of economic, boy, I don't even know what to call it. It's certainly not a well thought out economic plan. It feels like a destruction. It feels like it's being made to happen. We've got we can put everybody on welfare, which was quite literally what the Clower and Piven two people suggested, to break the system in order to change it. That I could definitely see that coming as a way to destroy the welfare system so that you can rebuild it back into a universal basic income welfare system that is being paid out by central bank digital currencies, which don't actually cost you anything to create. That might be and are fully restricted, like food stamps or EBT cards or something like that. I could see that as a way to do it. You could promise people that do nothing free things. AOC did that in her Green New Deal, where she talked about how they're going to transition to this green energy future where people are free to work or not work if they choose to. Really? Oh, you're just going to pay the people to not work? Well, we'll see how that goes. We could overdiagnose the weakest generation. I'm talking about the Gen Z people, the Gen Zs out there. I'm sorry for those of you that are in Gen Z. You know what I'm talking about. if you're listening to this, you know that you're not the ones I'm targeting this towards, but that generation, this newer generation where everything is offensive to them and everything makes them feel all scared and icky inside, that this group, you could just overdiagnose all of them with ADHD and put them on SSRIs and get their mind scrambled and then tell them there's 100 different genders and get them all into a tizzy about that. That certainly wouldn't help. You could turn a blind eye to the new opium war that's being foisted upon us through the southern border with fentanyl by China. Now, I'm not one of these guys that's like China, China, China. They're the enemy of humanity. I don't trust China, but look, China got destroyed 2 centuries ago by the opium wars, by the British, by what they did, pumping opium into that country and getting everybody hooked on it and destroying the social fabric on the insides of China. And I don't think they forgot. And I know that it wasn't America that was doing that, but it looks like America is going to be the one that pays the price for that. So it might take 200 years before China is able to get their revenge. But listen, what's going on through the southern border with the drugs being brought in? And I fully know that it's not just China that's doing this, but why would you ever fire a shot at the United States when you could just feed them endless amounts of synthetic drugs that you can make in your factories in China and get paid for it too? Make a bunch of money and destroy your enemy at the same time. Oh, you could scare companies and industries away from wanting to do business with you over regulations. America has been great at that. Biden administration is actively telling entire industries not to come work with us. The oil and gas industry, I already mentioned that. What about crypto? They're making it impossible for any crypto companies to set up shop here. Coinbase just talked about, Brian Armstrong just talked about saying maybe we need to think about relocating our corporate offices somewhere else. Really? Their main corporate headquarters will be in Dubai in the next 3 years, mark my words. So they're not going to stick around and wait and deal with this. America, just in general, is just running entire up-and-coming industries out. You could gut the country with trade deals, with bad trade deals. I mean, we already saw what a bad trade deal looked like in the mid-90s with NAFTA. It's destroyed. NAFTA did to Detroit what COVID did to San Francisco. It just destroyed it. It just destroyed it. It destroyed manufacturing. It gutted it from the inside. It got all these people out of work. It moved industries, factories, entire companies out of America and elsewhere because they could get their labor cheaper and didn't have all sorts of environmental regulations to have to deal with. Now, I'm not somebody that says I want no regulations because I know what will happen when corporations don't have any sort of checks and balance. They'll just dump their toxic waste right into the river. I don't want that. I want reasonable regulations. But what we have in America right now are completely unreasonable regulations. I mean, what they're doing to the crypto industry in general is just, it's so short-sighted and stupid. But I understand it. I do understand it. I do understand it. They don't want a competitor to the dollar scam that they're trying desperately to prop up and keep that thing going. It's not going to last much longer. Look, America has no industrial capacity. All that's been outsourced. There's no middle class. They talk openly about wanting to destroy the middle class. This is something that the round tables people, you know, the British Round Table Society of like the late 1800s, early 1900s talked about that. Like in their fantasies, they dream of a world where they just destroy the middle class. So it's just rich and poor and that's it. So, you know, when 50,000 factories in America shut down in the mid 90s, they're never coming back. That's a destruction that was planned. What about schools? What about a doom loop for the nation with regard to education? Testing scores are in the toilet. Testing industry doesn't make any sense. You've got this woke ideology that's being taught to the kids. You've got safe spaces, which are convincing children that they don't need to grow up, that they can stay emotionally immature for longer than necessary. This is being not just offered to children, but advocated for. Safe spaces, when they hear something that makes them feel bad, they can go find a safe space where they can suck their thumb. This is extending, this isn't just kindergarten nap time. This is extending all the way into the university system for people that are up to like 22 years old still doing this. This is, again, this is part of the reason why I say this new generation is really doomed. I guess the bright side for those of you listening that are in this Generation Z, this new generation of people that are experiencing this, the bright side is you don't have much competition coming up. If you want to get yourself a good job and work your way up or do whatever, you don't have to compete with half the people. Half the people are incapable of competing due to anxiety. I've got anxiety today. Oh, I'm having a mental health crisis today. No, you're soft and weak, and you don't want to do the things you want to do. You need somebody to put their foot in your ass and say, you need the boss to call you and say, get to the office in the next 20 minutes or you're fucking fired. That's what you need. You need that. Everybody needs a boss to tell them that at least once, right? Because if you think that your boss is going to give you a safe space, well, unfortunately for me, the answer is they probably will these days. Yeah. But schools also have to deal with just the reality of cell phones, okay? In their classes, kids with cell phones that can do all sorts of things with them. ADHD, you've got to worry about overdiagnosing that. You've got a bunch of kids that can't sit still. They grew up on tablets and devices and TikTok, where everything's got to be boiled down to 30 seconds or they can't handle it. So we've got wealthy parents leave for private schools or better districts. If you can, you get your kids out of government schools. If you can't, still get your kids out of government schools. However you can get them out of those schools, get them out. I saw this someplace that I think it was James Lindsay, I think, said it, that the public school system is more than likely the only place that an American child who will become an adult will experience violence during their lifetime is more than likely in school, in a government school. And it's true. It's turned into Thunderdome. You know, you see all the videos of this. And on top of that, schools are instituting a war on the family. That sounds like a hardcore conservative talking point, but it's not. And it's evidenced by things like the Loudoun County School Board calling the FBI about parents showing up at the school board meetings, voicing their outrage and disapproval about a particular school district allowed some trans boy identifying as a male in disguise going into the girl's bathroom and like raping some girl. And then they hid that information from the families. It was a whole big thing. The parents found out about it. They went down to the school board meeting. They were pissed, rightly so. They made a big stink about it. And what did the school do? The school called in the FBI, and the FBI put all the parents on a domestic terrorist watch list. Okay? That's what schools have become. So we've got universities that are Marxist indoctrination camps. We've got you come out of there as a debt slave. That is, if you graduate, if you're able to graduate because you've gotten your teacher fired for making you read To Kill a Mockingbird or something like that. And on top of that, reports, interviews, statistics are showing that employers are hesitating in hiring newly graduated workers from this Generation Z because they find them difficult to deal with. So, you know, this is what you do if you're a nation pushing into a doom loop. Also, you know, asking for stricter gun control while the country has experienced the very violence that could be reduced by people having guns, right? So my question is, based on everything that you've heard here so far, is America, in a doom loop. What do you think? Let's look at a let's talk about a previous. I'll give you a previous example, and then I'll give you like a future example. So previous example is this, because San Francisco is one thing, and COVID is a weird variable, and that could you know, you could say, well, it's not really, you know, it's kind of an outlier. You could throw that out, but well, you're right. We could throw it out, but San Francisco's still imploding. But let's talk about this. What about the old coal mining towns? Okay. Picture you're in like Appalachia, right? You're in West Virginia or someplace in Pennsylvania, someplace, a small town, relatively small town that has a coal mine in the area that's been in the area for a while. Now, this is a fictional scenario, but it's a fictional scenario based on real scenarios. This is how a previous doom loop worked. Politician makes a decision to not renew the lease on a coal mine in the area. Okay. It's a political decision made by political scumbags for business deals. Maybe it's because the competitor of the owner of that coal mine bribed that politician to make it difficult for his competition, and they decided for whatever reason to close down and not renew the lease on this particular coal mine. Okay. We'll just use that as it's a fake example, but it's an example that no doubt has happened multiple times. So what happens? Coal mine closes down, right? Everyone that worked there is laid off because you can't, it's closed. So what happens? Stores in that area that sold products to the residents, what do you think happens to them? Well, their sales go down. There's nobody working. All the people that used to shop there that worked at the coal mine, they don't have jobs anymore. They're not making money, so they're not shopping at your store. And it'll depend store to store based on, you know, maybe the grocery store doesn't experience this right away because everyone needs to eat. But certainly the guy that's selling something high end, or maybe the guy that's selling new shoes, or maybe the guy that's selling great watches or what, all of a sudden there's no market anymore because people don't have any money because they don't have jobs. Then some people start to realize this and leave. They need a job elsewhere. They're not going to stick around to find out. They leave. And so the tax base in that city now gets smaller because there's fewer people contributing to the taxes there. So now what? Now services are cut because the budget shrinks. Now there's fewer police. You know, we have to cut all kinds of things. Your roads aren't getting fixed. But who will build the roads? Government. Your roads aren't getting fixed. Your schools are losing funding. You have to cut the number of police that you employ. You have to cut the number of firefighters that you have. You have to close a firehouse, maybe one of them. You've got another one that's still open. Everything starts to feel the pain. Schools start to close down or consolidate, and more jobs disappear, and then more people start to leave, right? So all of these things starts to ramp up. You get into this feedback loop that starts getting faster and bigger. Home values start to crash because sellers can't find any buyers. Who's going to buy a house in this old coal mining town that lost the coal mine, right? So now all of a sudden property values are falling. So what does that mean? It means that property taxes are falling. It also means that that people that sell their houses there will get, if they even can, will get far less money. So even the ones that want to sell their house and stick around and rent something, they're going to have less money. But more than likely, they're out of there. They're selling their house because they're leaving. They're not going to stick around. So home values crash, property tax revenue crashes, helplessness increases, drug and alcohol use increases, more money is removed from the system and exchanged for drugs, right? So at least before there was all this hopelessness, the money sort of circulated through the city. It went from the coal mine to the worker to the shoe store guy to the landlord to the supplier of shoes, whatever. You know, it made this loop. Now, because hopelessness has been injected into this and the drug and alcohol use goes through the roof, now all that revenue that could have totally kept circulating is now exiting the system in the form of it's going into the hands of drug dealers. and they're not going to the shoe store, and they're not paying rent, and they're not paying their taxes, and they're not doing any of these things. Fuck taxes anyway, but I'm just saying they're not paying them. So, and then what happens? The city dies, right? So you can work your way through just the old Americana story of the coal mine that left the town and town just dried up. That's a doom loop. That's a reasonable old-timey explanation of a doom loop for that. Let's take an example. Let's move just a little. Let's talk about a potential future doom loop, okay? Because we've got coal mines, we've got San Francisco. Well, where could we go in the future where we would experience something similar to that? Oh, well, let me ask you this. What do you think a green agenda feedback loop looks like, huh? Government decides to kill oil and gas with regulations. Biden comes out and says, we're not, no more drilling, no more oil permits. He's already said this. No more oil permits. He's gone back on his word. He's opening up parts of Alaska because he's a liar and he's not married to this ideology in actuality. But they've closed all these things down. They've closed down the your ability to drill. They already said that we're going to make it so that offshore drilling permits can be reduced. And he said that they could be reduced all the way down to zero permits. So let's just imagine that they do this. They go the Build Back Better route and they decide that they're going to kill off the oil and natural gas industry with regulations. And okay, so they do that. They make that decision. And it's happening, by the way. These things are happening. It's just happening slower. So they start pushing renewables instead with massive tax incentives that they put the taxpayers on the hook for, right? Because you're not going to get these companies to operate against their own self-interest unless you can incentivize them with taxes, so tax rebates. So that's what the government does. They come in and they say, well, in order to spur growth of the Solyndras of the world, when Obama gave like $1 billion to a solar company that squandered it all, this is what happens, right? So you're going to see the government putting its thumb on the invisible scale of marketplaces and starting to incentivize companies with either outright money or tax incentives, whatnot, or lack of regulation in the green energy market, but overregulation in the oil and gas market. And then, so if in this fictional scenario in the future, they do that, and then what do you get? What's the result of that? Well, what you get is you get what's going on in Germany right now, not in the future in some fictional scenario, but what's happening today in Germany, which is there's not enough electricity. They'd have to bring out of retirement one of their nuclear facilities because they don't have enough energy to handle manufacturing inside of Germany. In Germany, a country that is built on manufacturing, a country that is very meticulous and, you know, logical. There was an era where they maybe weren't as logical, but, you know, very, very industrial. The industrial Germans, they're sort of known for it, right? But even they got hornswoggled into this shitty deal at the behest of NATO and Biden and Zelensky and all these assholes out there that are telling you that you have to vote against your own self-interest by blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline so that you don't have access to oil and gas. This is what is waiting America. Not enough electricity to fund, not enough electricity to even take care of the people, let alone the industry. So you then companies leave, right? So what's going to happen? What happens in this scenario when you make an unnecessary or too early push to a green agenda that's not ready for it because the infrastructure isn't ready and the economy isn't set up for this? Well, then you get what's happening in Germany where you don't have enough energy. And then eventually companies just leave due to spotty electricity, or they just plain go out of business. And then the tax revenue from oil and gas industry, it's gone because you killed the industry. New corporations got tax breaks to come in and start the green revolution. So you get no tax revenue from them. People start to leave. So sales tax, property tax, that goes out the window. Home values decline. And then nothing gets fixed. Infrastructure starts to fall apart and jobs disappear. But drugs and alcohol increase. And then the city dies. This is a feedback loop that is so obvious when you take a look at it. It's so obvious. And yet we're walking right into it. We're walking right into it. This is the future that they want. This is the future that they want. Because if you listen to what Joe Biden said when he was running for office, the three or four times that he actually campaigned, he said that they want to build back better. We know that's from the World Economic Forum. We understand where that comes from. But the build back better, as I've said plenty of times before, just in and of itself, the name implies total destruction because it's got the word back in there. Otherwise, if everything was going fine, you wouldn't have to build it back better. The build back better implies that you're going to destroy the current paradigm so that you can build it back better into a green, woke, revolutionary, stunning and brave society. 15-minute cities, micro apartments, smart thermostats, you'll eat the bugs, you'll own nothing, central bank digital currencies, universal basic income, all that good stuff. Woke district attorneys in big cities are leading this. Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Chicago, Washington, D.C. Did I say New York City? I'll say it again. A city so nice. They named it twice. A city so filled with rats that people are leaving there in droves. And who's financing the woke district attorney? George Soros, you know, of course. Because what does he do? He starts cultural revolutions. What do you need to do in order to start a revolution? You need to create so much chaos that people are begging for a solution to this. A feedback loop of destruction on purpose to destroy America. Four more years. Boy, I'll tell you what, if we give Joe Biden four more years, I don't think there'll be anything left. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions, on Instagram at Macroaggressions Podcast, or you can go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.